Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available.
Tech Guide.
The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further.
Tech Guide.
I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot-selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want that to be light. We want that to be portable. And this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Hello and welcome to Episode 9 of the Tech Guide Podcast. Glad you could join us. I'm Stephen Fenwick, editor of techguide.com.au. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. Plenty to talk about in this week's show. First up, we'll talk about the amazing growth of mobile transactions, a virus targeted at Mac users, and also some information about the new iPhone's rumored mini dock connector. In our reviews, we'll be checking out the WD Minet N900 router with built-in hard drive, the Samsung compact system cameras with Wi-Fi built-in, and a rapid charge cable for all your iOS products. This week's Tech Guide interview is with Symantec's Director of Strategic Solutions, Sean Kapelke, about Symantec's intelligence report for July 2012. Some interesting stuff coming out of that. And we'll also get to your questions, of course, on the Tech Guide help desk. A lot to get through, so let's kick it off.
Now, a Tech Guide news update.
Well, it's no surprise to many that mobile transactions are on the rise. We're using smartphones and tablets, and these are not only for communication, we're also using them to access online shopping, and we're actually making purchases using these mobile devices. And a new report from our good friends at Juniper Research has revealed that mobile transactions will reach $750 billion annually by 2017. That's only 5 years away. And that's $750 billion each year. That's not up a total for all those years up until 2017. That's annually. And that's on physical and digital products. In other words, physical products that you can order from your smartphone or tablet, I don't know, some clothes or technology, whatever you buy, delivered to your door. But also digital products, so things like games and music and movies and things like that as well. But $750 billion annually, that's a lot of money. And the reason for this is from the rapid uptake of tablets. Are seen to be responsible, as well as smartphones too, but in particular tablets, which seem to be taking away these transactions from traditional areas that we use to make them online, like laptops and desktop computers. In fact, the report has thrown up a whole new term that they're calling couch commerce. Reason they're calling it that is because they're finding that increasingly consumers are actually engaging in their online shopping. They're doing their shopping while they're sitting in front of the television, whether that's the time where they've got time to kill, whether they're watching something, they've seen something that they're interested in on their TV show. But that's when they're reaching for their smartphone and for their tablet so they can make those orders. So it's becoming this couch commerce, they're saying, is going to account for 30% of all e-retail purchases within that five-year period up until 2017. So that's a lot of power for you couch surfers with your tablets and your smartphones. But another thing too that was interesting about this report was the fact that not only are these going to be purely online purchases, so you order your product and it gets delivered to your door, or you download your digital product, the report also showed that a growing trend is going to be the mobile or tablet being used as a bit of a digital hub for physical stores. So, for example, you would say shop for an outfit or some shoes or whatever the product may be, and you simply order it and pay for it using your mobile device, but then head along to that retail partner's local store to make the pickup. I think moving forward, physical stores, which are facing many challenges against online shopping, this could be their future. So the Harvey Normans of the world, the Myers, the major chains will have a larger online presence, but allow the customer to make the purchase, pay for the purchase, and simply use the store as a pickup point, or perhaps as a place where they can touch and feel the product. Because one downside of online shopping is you can't actually try things on or touch and feel the actual product you're paying for. So this could be the trend moving forward, as Juniper's research has pointed out. So well, are you a mobile shopper? We'd like to know. Get in touch with us here at Tech Guide, info@techguide.com.au. But the full story is on Tech Guide, based on Juniper Research's report. So do yourself a favor and check it out. Okay, hands up, anyone out there who is a Mac user. Keep your hand up if you don't have internet security on your Mac. I'm assuming there's going to be a lot of hands left up in the air out there, because a lot of Mac users are under the false impression that Macs are immune to online viruses. Everyone's really targeting Windows, that is what they're assuming, and there are no such viruses that are targeting Mac users. Well, have I got news for you? A new virus targeting Mac users specifically was discovered last week. It's known as Crisis, or Morcut. And this malware actually can install itself in your system and allow the user, the hacker, to access your information and even send and execute commands on your Mac. So that's a little bit frightening. So if you have sensitive information, you may have your bank account details. They might install a key logger, so it's keeping track of whatever you're doing on your Mac. This virus could possibly compromise your security. And for those who don't have internet security on the Mac, and as I said earlier, there'd be a lot of you out there, there is a way to check to see if you've actually been infected with this virus. Trend Micro have come to the rescue and developed a free cleanup solution to eliminate the threat, the malware, if it happens to have already installed itself on your system. Now, how would it have installed itself on your system, you're asking? Well, all you need to do, if you don't have a protected computer, whether it's a Mac or a PC, in this case we're talking Mac, if you visit a malicious site, there's often hackers and cyber criminals directing people to malicious sites, either through poison searches, things like that, so to direct people to these malicious sites. And all you need to do is browse one of these sites, and if you're unprotected, this malware can infect your computer, can install itself on your computer, and then allow the hackers access to your system down the track. Now, getting back to Macs seeming to think they're immune, well, this illustrates that they're not. The majority of viruses, of course, are on the Windows system. That runs 90% of the world's computers. So the hackers and cyber criminals out there who want to cause the most mayhem, who want to make the most money, are going to target Windows users. Hence the reason why most viruses are written for Windows, for PC users. But this isn't the first virus that's attacked Mac users this year. Earlier this year, there was another virus called the Flashback Trojan, which used a little loophole, a little weakness in the JavaScript software on the Macs and installed itself. And again, could compromise information like passwords and even account numbers that happen to be on your computer. Apple actually had to jump in and issue an update to patch up the security flaw. So if you're using a Mac, do yourself a favor, read this story. If you don't have internet security software, get out and get some. There's a lot of actually free internet security solutions for Mac users. There's a lot of other good ones that you pay for, like from Norton's, Trend Micro, all the majors. But if you are under this false sense of security, knowing that you've got a Mac and you think, well, I don't need internet security, well, you should read our story on Tech Guide, and that will quickly dispel that for you.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
While on the subject of Mac, and in particular the Apple brand and the iPhone, that's a bit of a segue there. Well, the big rumor ahead of the iPhone 5 launch, if it's going to be called the iPhone 5, could be called the new iPhone. The rumor is it's going to be launched around mid-September. But the strongest thing we're hearing is that the new device, whatever it's going to be called, is going to have this new mini dock connector. So the usual 30-pin connector, which is about a couple of centimeters wide. From all the strong rumors that are doing the rounds on the internet, it seems that this dock connector is going to shrink dramatically. And over the weekend, I ran a story about the new smaller dock connector, and after there were some leaked images, which were allegedly to be leaked parts for the new phone, and it showed this new smaller dock connector. Now, what's the big fuss some of you may be asking, well, the big fuss is this. There's a whole industry built around the whole docking system, whether it's on an iPhone, on an iPad, an iPod, that many products, and even products from rival companies, which always amazes me that companies like Samsung and Sony and Panasonic and all these other major companies build devices with docks to connect Apple's products. They know just how big Apple's market share is in all of those areas, and they want to accommodate. They want a piece of that market. So getting back to this new smaller dock connector, and what's that going to mean? Well, the new iPhone, if it does in fact have this new smaller dock connector, is not going to fit your – if you bought a dock today – it's not going to fit that dock. So what's going to happen, and there'll no doubt be adapters, Apple will probably have from day one, if they do have this new dock connector, from day one, a dock adapter. So you'll have to spend a little bit extra money and use this adapter. So if you want to connect your new device, and I'm hearing that this is going to cross all of Apple's products, this mini dock connector, not just the new iPhone. So future iPads, iPods, all of their mobile products are going to probably feature this smaller dock connector. So what's going to happen? You'll probably need that adapter. But just getting back to the mini dock, it's a lot smaller. So obviously, size is important with this with the new iPhone, or lack of size, I should say. So obviously the device needs to, will try to be a lot thinner and lighter. And any area where they can save a little bit of space, a little bit of room, like the dock connector, they're going to take advantage of that. Now, the pictures are on Tech Guide that we ran from a French website called nowhereelse.fr. And they show the dock connector sitting up next to a USB plug. And the new dock connector, which is, there was an argument whether it was an 8-pin connector, a 9-pin connector. There are actually 8 little gold contacts, but the 9th pin is actually the plug itself. So whether it's an 8 or 9 is not decided. So technically, they're both right, whether it's an 8 or 9-pin connector. But it's remarkable how small the dock connector is. It's a small white cable with a little metal plug on the end. Sitting next to the USB, it is almost half the size of a USB plug. But we don't know this for sure. Apple can spring any kind of surprise they want. There's rumored to be, very strongly rumored to be, a media event in San Francisco on September the 12th, and which we're expecting the new iPhone to be released, possibly even a mini iPad, a 7-inch iPad, and who knows what else, maybe a refresh of the iPod products. September used to be the month where the iPod events, where all the new iPods were revealed too. So I think this media event, if and when it does happen, September 12 is the date that's rumored to be, is going to be quite an event if all these rumors are true, that is. We'll see a new phone, possibly a new iPad, and maybe even some new iPods. Well, we look forward to find that out, but only time will tell. We're not exactly sure what's going to occur until Apple actually releases it. But stay tuned to Tech Guide. We'll be on the pulse with that kind of news. As soon as we find out any information, we'll let you know right away.
Tech Guide now. A Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
Moving into our review section of the program, we've got three good products we're going to chat about today. Kicking it off with the WD, the Western Digital Minet N900 Central. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's a product that does a fair few things. Now, as we know, WD, Western Digital, are probably best known for their external hard drives, whether they're desktop, portable. They've got quite a heritage in that area. But what the MyNet N900 brings to the table is a built-in router. So not only is this product going to be able to store and back up your files, it's also going to give you wireless access to those files because of the fact that it is a wireless router. So it is a router alone, not a modem as well. So you need to have a modem to be able to use this product. You'll be able to connect the modem into the MyNet N900, and then you'll be able to physically connect 4 other products to the back of it, like a normal router. It looks about the same size as a router, MyNet N900. But with one difference, it does still contain either a 1 terabyte or a 2 terabyte capacity hard drive. So it can work as your backup, but it can also allow wireless access because it's putting that material, that hard drive, on the network. So it's kind of network drive mixed with a router. It does tick a lot of boxes. It's obviously an easy backup, and being wireless, it allows a lot more convenient backup, especially if you've got laptops in the home. And if you're a Mac user, the good news is it also supports Apple's Time Machine backup system as well. Now, the product is a dual band system, so it'll create a 2.4 gigahertz as well as a 5 gigahertz network, so you can prioritize material. So it's actually got built-in technology to recognize and prioritize the content that will need the priority for the bandwidth, the most bandwidth, things like HD movies, videos, if you're playing games, if you're a gamer, you want the fast connection, and even voice and video chat. So it will actually prioritize that for you on depending on which band it chooses. Each can have speeds of up to 450 megabits per second, each of the bands. So that's quite a lot of bandwidth at your disposal. The pricing, I reviewed the MyNet N900 Central, the 1 terabyte model, and it's priced at $399.99. And if you want to move up to the 2 terabyte version, it's an extra $100, $499.99. But well worth checking out. If you're in the market for a router and you haven't got an external hard drive, you need some space, you maybe want to have some movies or music or pictures on the hard drive for the family to share, for the office to share, this is a device that you should be looking at, the WD MyNet N900. And if you want to read the full review, head over to techguide.com.au. Now, we love a camera here at Tech Guide. We've reviewed a few lately, including some great reviews contributed by Chris Oaten, who's a professional photographer that I used to work with at News Limited. He used to be the Connect editor in Adelaide while I was the Connect technology editor in Sydney on the Daily Telegraph. So Chris and I go way back. He's reviewed a couple of cameras that Panasonic have released. So have a read of those at techguide.com.au. But what I'm talking about right now are some other cameras released by Samsung. They've released some new compact system cameras that feature built-in Wi-Fi connectivity. The NX20 and the NX1000 are the two new products that have been released. Now, starting with the NX20, it's a compact system camera, so it's got detachable lenses, has the quality of a digital SLR, but has a more compact body. So for those who don't want to go the whole hog with a digital SLR, don't want to go the EOS, the Nikons, they want something a little bit smaller, this is the product they should be looking at, the NX20 compact system camera with the smaller body, detachable lenses. It's also got a swivel display, which I quite like. So the display can be shifted out on the side, below. So you can not only take pictures of yourself in front of a landmark or with your friends, it can also be angled. So you can, if you're shooting at a difficult angle, that swivel display really comes in handy. The NX20. 20.3 megapixel resolution. It's got an APS-C CMOS sensor, and it also shoots full high-definition video as well. So that's a real all-in-one solution. There's the swivel display is 3-inch AMOLED display. So as I said, that swivel allows you to shoot at any kind of angle. There's also an electronic viewfinder, so you can use that to frame your shots. And it's got a fast 1 to 8,000 shutter as well. Moving down, to the NX1000. That's slightly cheaper. The NX20 is $999. NX1000, $749. It's got a slightly slimmer body, not as large as the NX20. Not that the NX20 is overly large. It's sort of got a slimmer body, more rounded edges on it, but still got most of the features that the NX has, minus the swivel display. But it's got things like smart filter technology so that you can apply different styles and themes to your pictures as well once you shoot them. But don't forget, there's also Wi-Fi thrown in the mix. We haven't forgotten that. And what Wi-Fi enables you to do is upload your photos wirelessly to your computer, and even share pictures right out of the camera, pictures and videos right out of the camera onto social networks like Facebook and Picasa, photo sharing sites too, Photo Bucket, even YouTube. You can upload a YouTube video from one of these cameras. Another feature that I quite like, and as you know, Samsung not only make cameras and TVs and all those other products, they also make Android smartphones, some very good Android smartphones, I should add. And what Wi-Fi also allows you to do is to use their compatible Android smartphones as a remote viewfinder. So you can link your smartphone to the camera. So whatever the camera is seeing, you can see through your smartphone screen. So you might be trying to capture a self-image, maybe a family portrait, and you want to line up the picture. You can use your Android smartphone to do it. So not only is it a remote viewfinder, it's also a remote shutter as well. So you can activate the shutter on the camera too. A really handy feature. Wi-Fi on cameras, you're going to hear a lot more about Wi-Fi. I think they've got a real challenge against smartphones. Smartphones obviously have this connectivity to instantly share your photographs. So these good quality cameras, the Samsung NX20 and the NX1000 take far greater pictures, better quality pictures than your smartphone ever will. So that with this added Wi-Fi connectivity, they're still making themselves appealing to photographers who want to share. And that's what you can do really easily with smartphones. And now you can do that with the NX20 and the NX1000. But if you want to read all about that, the full report is at techguide.com.au. Now, it's not often that I review a cable on Tech Guide, but I'm making an exception here because this new cable from Padax, which is a very well-known accessory specialist, they make iPad and iPhone accessories, they've released a new rapid charge cable, which at first glance looks exactly like the white sync cable that you get with your iPad or iPhone or iPod. But there's one major difference. This is a rapid charge cable. The actual USB socket of the cable is slightly thicker and longer than a normal USB cable would because it contains the smarts, the extra charge technology to give you that faster charge through a computer's USB port. What it also enables is Windows computers to now charge iOS devices. It was only before this cable was released, the only thing you could do on a Windows machine with your sync cable is sync your content. You weren't able to charge your iOS device, your iPhone, iPad, iPod, using a Windows PC. You could on a Mac, but not on a PC. But with this, the Padax Rapid Charge Cable, and it's only priced at $19.95, so very affordable, you can now charge using your Windows PC, but also charge 25% faster than a standard USB sync cable. Handy to carry around, so you don't have to be lugging around a charger. You don't have to be looking for a PowerPoint. The Padax Rapid Charge could literally fit in your pocket, could fit easily in your bag. And if your iOS device runs low on charge, all you need to do is reach out for the Padax Rapid Charge cable and you get a faster charge than you would using a normal cable.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide interview.
This week's Tech Guide interview is with Symantec's Sean Kapolke, who's Director of Strategic Solutions at Symantec, and he's talking about the Symantec's their intelligence report, which was released for July 2012. It's basically the report is the latest analysis of cybersecurity threats and trends and about the many dangers which can be found online. Things like phishing scams, malware, the fact that too, and it's interesting, he'll be speaking about this in our interview in a moment, how large events, for example, the Olympics, which have just finished, can attract all of these scammers to send out false, you know, like bait for you to click on some Olympic news. They get in on the action when there's a big event to help attract people to these malicious sites that they try to steer people to, and that way they could install this malware on their computers if they're unprotected. But the figures show that we've increased some the phishing's increased by and the scams have increased. And what it basically is, and Sean will say this himself in a moment, we still need to be vigilant. No matter how much security we've got on our computer and how much we do, we just still need to use our common sense when it comes to opening attachments, sharing files. We need to be still very sensible about how we conduct ourselves online. Well, Sean joined us, so let's hear what he had to say. Hi, Sean. Thanks for joining us. Now, Symantec has published their intelligence report for July 2012, and with the Olympics just over, it's proven that big events do attract a lot of scammers.
Yeah, look, they certainly do, Stephen. We find this whenever there's a significant event happening. You know, Olympics is a great one, and it's always a great timing because, you know, every 4 years to see how the threat landscape has changed and the new ways that scammers are trying to attack people through the major events, whether it be Olympics or some sort of a sporting event. And we're seeing some interesting things this year. So obviously with mobile devices and mobile apps out there being a big play in the market these days, we're seeing the attackers move onto those platforms. They're actually, you know, getting access and taking some of these, you know, applications that may give you latest results and things like that, and
sure.
and packaging risks into those devices and those applications. So lots of interesting things happening there.
Okay, but it's still the usual suspects in terms of spam, phishing and malware. Let's start off with spam. According to the report, 67.6%. Is that an increase of 0.8% apparently from June? So spam is something that just doesn't seem to go away, does it?
No, it doesn't. Look, and it's one of those areas that, you know, about a year ago there was a little bit of a decline in generally across the industry in the spam, as some of the major spam networks that were taken offline mid last year. But we've seen it creep up a little bit, and an event like the Olympics is another great time that we see that increase. You know, people are going to start trying to send Olympic-related type of spam messages. We've seen that over the last few weeks as well. So, yeah, look, spam is it's an ongoing pain that we've never really got fully under control.
And phishing, another one of our usual suspects here, where people trying to impersonate reputable companies and institutions. Apparently, according to your report, the Symantec Intelligence Report, one in 475.3 emails is a phishing email. Now, we've just got to really stay alert, don't we, and use our common sense here.
Yeah, look, I think it's one of those areas that it's been a constant issue for a couple of years now, and it's a lot easier to get these targeted attacks happening as well, because, you know, I think Twitter's a great example of that. Is we get all excited, you know, some people watching their Twitter feeds when they're keeping up with latest events and things happening. The spammers are using Olympic-related hashtags on Twitters, trying to, you know, to connect you, get you to hit on the wrong link, and take you through to the wrong site. So look, it just goes down to, once again, to common sense. If you don't know who it's come from or where it's potentially going, it's always best to just avoid clicking on these links or reading some of these emails.
Sure. And there's also, it's a worrying thing too, where malicious websites that are out there purely designed, it's almost like the internet's version of a spider web to try to trap you at these websites. And they serve up some malicious malware. So if you've got an unprotected computer, you could have some malware installed on your device just by browsing that site. Is that right?
Yeah, very simply, and that's why I think a lot of the big challenges for a lot of people out there today who may not be computer savvy or security savvy is that quite often when the computer asks you to do something, people often just hit OK and accept it. And, you know, they're getting drawn to these malicious websites sometimes through spam, through other mediums, and they are installing malicious applications and malware onto our computers. So, you know, it goes back to the simple basics that we always keep pushing with everyone, is that, you know, it's always the obvious of, you know, make sure we've got passwords in the right areas, but also too, you know, making sure things like our systems are up to date with the latest patches, and then, you know, the 101 and make sure we've got some basic security software installed on there will definitely help people get through that. But just a little bit of education and understanding, you know, some of these potential risks through, you know, mediums like yours as well, is going to go a long way, I think, to helping reduce the risk of people coming across these type of websites.
No worries, Sean. We'll really appreciate your time today.
Not a problem at all. It's a pleasure.
Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
One question that we've had asked a couple of times this week is we always get asked for advice, and we're happy to give it here at Tech Guide. But one thing we've been asked by a couple of readers is advice on buying an all-in-one computer. An all-in-one computer, as its name suggests, has everything, the CPU, everything is built into the monitor. A great example is the iMac. There are a few other PC examples too, built by HP, Asus, Acer. They've all got their own. Toshiba even have now an all-in-one PC, which contains the whole kit and caboodle inside the monitor. Of course, there's a separate keyboard and a separate mouse, but all the guts of the computer are built in behind the monitor. Now, the advantage of that is it takes up less desk space, so it's got a smaller footprint. And it's also that a lot of them have a real focus on design, so they've taken a lot of trouble to design a computer that looks really, really cool, can be positioned somewhere in your home that can be accessed by the whole family. Now, on the Windows side, I've noticed, I think Asus have them, HP, they're coming up with touchscreen all-in-one computers. And that's important because anyone who's thinking of buying a new Windows desktop computer should keep in mind the fact that Windows 8, which will be out just a little bit later this year, will have a lot of touch capability. So the operating system is going to be great not only for a desktop solution, it's also going to be good for use on tablets and also, of course, on smartphones. But having that touch ability, especially on a computer in your home that's accessed by the whole family, will make accessing the information, sharing the information, and just generally using that computer in that environment a lot easier. So something to keep in mind. The pricing, I think iMac started about $1,200 to $1,300. The screen sizes, it seems on average now 27 inch seems to be the largest size you can buy. That's the biggest iMac you can buy. Asus earlier this year released their first 27 inch, which at the time was the biggest sized Windows all-in-one PC. I think they've now been joined by a couple other companies with screens of that size. So bigger is better, it seems, with all-in-one computers. So if you are considering that, keep that in mind. Of course, I also get asked by a lot of other people, they're quite happy with their monitor, their keyboard and their mouse. Then it's simply just a matter of then replacing the tower, replacing the CPU, which can be done quite easily. But on the other hand, if your monitor, mouse and keyboard are quite old, like 4, 5, 6 years old, it's probably cheaper to buy an all-in-one solution. You're getting you can get for around $1,000, $1,200, $1,100, a decent all-in-one system. PC, iMac started about $1,300, as I mentioned before. All-in-one computers, it's all-in-one. Downside is, if something goes wrong with it, you need to replace the monitor, everything's got to go. Or if it needs to be sent out for repairs, then you can't just simply replace one part of it. It's all or none. All or none for an all-in-one. There are, poet, and I didn't even know it.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, there's a few people out there interested in setting up their own home theater system. Now, home theaters are terrific. I'm a big fan of a home theater. I have my very own home theater here at the Tech Guide offices. I'm a big fan of movies and good sound quality. And I have a 7.1 system here in my home. And it's not that hard to set up. A lot of people get intimidated thinking, well, how am I going to set this up? Now, there's a few solutions. So I'm going to talk about the all-in-one or the home theater in a box solution, and also chat about the more advanced sort of separate speaker, separate component solution as well. But starting with the all-in-one home theater in a box solution, it is quite a easy way to get yourself set up in your home theater. Now, home theater systems, there are at least six speakers to start off with. If you want a 5.1 system, 5.1, so five speakers, there's left, right, center, and rear left, rear right. That's your five. The 0.1 is the subwoofer, which is the non-directional speaker that can be placed anywhere in the room that will provide that low bass explosions, rumbling sounds through your soundtrack. But left and right obviously have to be in the right place because that provides the direction of the action. Same thing with the rear speakers as well. Center channel is mainly where the voices come from. So the actors, their voices appear to be coming from the screen. When you can see them on the screen, you want their voices to be coming as if they are coming straight out of the screen. 7.1 adds two more side speakers, more rear effect speakers, and again, a directional. The 0.1 again stands for the subwoofer. Now, there are a few companies, Samsung, LG, Sony, that have great all-in-one solutions, Panasonic as well, I should add, where it's quite simple to set them up. All the speakers are clearly labeled. The cables connect back to the central receiver. Some systems have a built-in receiver and Blu-ray player. Other systems have a separate receiver, separate Blu-ray player. And the beauty of having an all-in-one solution is that they're pretty good value for money. I think for around $1,000, you can get a decent system that provides a decent sound with often wireless rear speakers. So there's no cable crossing from the back of the room to the front of the room. The wireless speakers then relay the signal wirelessly using a transmitter and a receiver at the front. So you're not going to be tripping over cables. The only thing you need for your wireless speakers and the transmitter is power. So you need a power point at the back of the room. But it's quite simple and doesn't take too long to set up a home theater system. Now, if you're serious about a home theater system, you want a bit more, you got a bit more budget, a bit more money to spend, you're trying to go for a little bit more quality, you maybe even have a dedicated room for your home theater. You may have built a new house, you've got a media room, home theater room, whatever you want to call it. That's the solution I've got here at home here, and I've decided I went for that solution so that I had to buy separate components. So I've got my Blu-ray player, my AV receiver, my speakers, the amplifier, and what it allows you to do, not only spend more money, but it allows you to choose the speaker brands that you want. There are some great choices out there. But as I said, this is for those who've got a bit more in the budget to spend. But basically, you're creating a similar solution to as you would in a all-in-one, out-of-the-box solution. Thing is, though, you're going to spend a bit more money with the sort of the higher budget solution. You're probably going to need to talk to a specialist. There's a few home theater specialists out there, people like Audio Connection, Len Wallace Audio here in Sydney, and they professionally can install these kinds of systems. Unless you're pretty handy snaking cables around your house, you probably need a bit of professional help to set up this dedicated system. And we're talking, you can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a system that would be as good as going to the movies. So that's the whole idea of it. The technology has made home theater so much better, and the quality is incredible now with high definition Blu-ray. You're getting absolute cinema quality pictures as well as sound. It's literally a cinema in your home, hence the name home theater. There's plenty of info I've written about home theaters on Tech Guide if you want to check us out there. But as you can hear from my lengthy explanation, I'm a bit of a fan. Home theater is something that if you haven't got one and you're thinking about getting one, you won't be sorry if you have a try. Well, that's our show for another week. I hope you enjoyed it. We'd like to get your feedback, though, and your questions. So feel free to get in touch with us here at Tech Guide. Send us an email at info@techguide.com.au. We're really keen to hear from you. Give us your feedback, some suggestions, maybe send us in your questions. You can come to the Tech Guide forum if you do have your questions and you want them answered on the Tech Guide site. We've got a lot of really loyal readers here at Tech Guide who jump in, and apart from myself, of course, I try to get in and answer a lot of the readers' questions, but a very loyal band of readers. You all know who you are, who love coming in and helping our other readers with their technical issues or suggestions. Feel free, come through to the Tech Guide forum. So that's it. Until next week, we hope you can tune in again. Until then, see you later.